your tears on my pillow that won't dry on the road beyond my ears. I've no sorrow, but today I don't walk alone. Step by step,
day by day,
I'm on the road to recovery, trusting God along the way, trusting God along the way, trusting God all the way.
Good evening, everybody. Good evening, good evening, good evening. Gonna take a second, let everyone get their seats. Welcome to Fort Lauderdale's Primary Purpose, Big Book Study Group's Thursday night Alcoholics and God Speaker Step Series. I'm a recovered alcoholic, and my name is John. Ryan's gonna come up and give us our joke for the week.
Hi, I'm a recovered alcoholic. My name's Ryan. What's the definition of a New Year's resolution?
What?
Something that goes in one year and out the other.
All right. Thanks for joining us tonight. In a minute, after we get the laughs out, we're going to do our 2-minute meditation. So please take a moment to get situated, spread out, get comfortable, turn off devices that make noise because they probably will distract others around you. We take this time to get connected to God. We let the craziness of the day or holiday kind of drift away and ask God to help you stay focused on the step study tonight. Pretty important stuff. So Fred's got the lights and enjoy your meditation.
Thank you.
we're going to do the fog light prayer. If you don't know it, it's up here on the banner. There's also cards and bookmarks and such on the chairs. God, let your love shine through me like a fog light, so those who are lost safe and dying can find your love through me. Amen. There's a solution from the Big Book, page 17. A tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. We have a way out on which we can absolutely agree and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the great news this book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism. So I've asked Karina to come up and read Appendix 2, Spiritual Experience. She's one of our family from out of town, so whenever they come in, we always find a way to get them up here. We read this because the main purpose of the 12 steps is to have a spiritual experience, so we think it's important to know what one is. So help me welcome Karina.
I'm a recovered alcoholic. Spiritual experience. The term spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book, which upon careful reading shows that the personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself among us in many different forms. Yet it is true that our first printing gave many readers the impression that these personality changes or religious experiences must be in the nature of sudden and spectacular upheavals. Happily for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous. In the first few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described. Though it was not our intention to create such an impression, many alcoholics have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate and overwhelming God consciousness, followed at once by a vast change in feeling and outlook. Among our rapidly growing membership of thousands of alcoholics, such transformations, though frequent, are by no means the rule. Most of our experiences are what the psychologist William James calls the educational variety, because they develop slowly over a period of time. Quite often, friends of the newcomer are aware of the difference long before he is himself. He finally realizes that he has undergone a profound alteration in his reaction to life. That such a change could hardly have been brought about by himself alone. What often takes place in a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. With few exceptions, our members find that they have tapped an unsuspected inner resource, which they presently identify with their own conception of a power greater than themselves. Most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of a spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. Most emphatically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable. There is a principle which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation. Herbert Spencer, Alcoholics Anonymous.
Thanks, Karina. I had such a hard time remembering her name for some reason. I had to ask her like four times. Sorry about that. So, please refrain from disturbing others by talking or constantly getting up and sitting back down. The coffee area that we've got outside the doors is closed for the duration of the meeting. There's also restrooms out there if we need to use those. It's a tech-free meeting, so set your phones to airplane/meeting mode or just turn them off. Pat R. is on his 11th week with us. I know he's a little under the weather tonight, so take it easy on him, but it's been an honor to have him here, as always. Without further ado, Pat.
I don't want to share this. I'm a recovered alcoholic. My name is... And thanks to the 12 Steps of Alcoholics Anonymous outlined in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, which is the program of AA, I have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. And for that, I'll be forever grateful. AA didn't just give me my life back, but it gave me one worth living. And for that, I'll be forever grateful. And yes, I am a little under the weather tonight, so we'll see where this goes. I have no idea where it's going. But I do want to touch on something before I talk about step 11. You know, I share with you guys, and the beauty of doing this stuff is that it keeps me on track with my program, and it keeps me current. You know, it seems like every time I do one of these series, I can always look back at them and something major was going on in my life or something significant took place in my life. And I always talk about, yeah, I remember doing that step series in Advent. That's when my divorce took place, you know. And, you know, and I remember doing that step series down there, and, you know, that's when I had the surgery. Or, you know, recently I did a step series down at the Sober Today Club. And I almost lost my mother. And, you know, I always kind of, you know, I can always relate those. And this, you know, it was no coincidence to me that last week I was talking about, or last couple of weeks I've been talking about 9 and 10 and keeping my side of the street clean and continuing on those amends. You know, we continue to clean up the past as we enter this new way of life, as we start practicing this new way of life. And I share with you guys that that I was in conflict with my daughter-in-law, and you know, and I would talk about a lot about harms versus wrongs, you know, and regardless of who was wrong in that situation or who was right or you know who was wrong in that situation, it harmed a lot of people that are involved in that. It harmed not just her, but my relationship with my son. My oldest son, my relationship with my granddaughter, his daughter, and their daughter, and it put my other son, my youngest son, who hosts the holiday for us in Jacksonville, it puts him in an uncomfortable situation to bring us all together to his house. And thank God for this program where we can heal, you know. And you know, I did, because I had just shared it with you guys, you know, I went up there this weekend and admitted my wrong in that situation and let her know that I was sorry that, you know, if whatever I did hurt her in any way, it was not my intention, obviously, but it was the result, without a doubt. And she didn't take it real well at the moment, at the time. But I did begin a healing, and I have been on the phone with her all day long, and that relationship is coming back together, and that's a miracle of this program. You know, we've been in conflict for probably a year and a half, and this is my son's wife, who I was absolutely best friends with at one time, and because I went down a particular road that I thought was right, I absolutely put her in a position where she really she hated me for where I had gone. And it's just, without this program, those healings just don't take place, you know. And it, like I say, the healing isn't just for her, but it's for both my sons, both their wives, for me, for everybody involved. And I just want to thank you guys for letting me be here to do these kind of things where I can stay on track with that kind of stuff and stay current in those areas. And step 11, I got to tell you, you know, I talked about it last week. Thank God Bill was as inexperienced as I was about God when he got here. And, you know, step 11, we talked about this two-way and three-way prayer that they used to do back in the Oxford groups, this exercise that they used to do, and this How to Listen to God pamphlet that they published later on. That I came across down the road, where I was able to start on a simpler level, and really my step 11 looked like an inventory from the beginning. And if you read pages 84 through 88, that's what that looks like. It looks like an all-day-long inventory, and then a nightly inventory, and then in the morning, ask for direction. And then during the day, stay on course. And when you're not on course, make a course correction with step 10. And then step 11 at night, look and see how well you did with step 11, see how well you did with step 10 again all day long. And it's just this constant inventory, this constant self-examination in the daytime in your head and at nighttime through prayer and meditation. And that's the way I saw step 11 for a lot of years was self-examination through prayer and meditation. You know, and that's what I did. I used pages 84 through 88 to stay sober for many years, to try to keep my side of the street clean for many years. And step 11 talks about that. First off, we found out in step 3 that self-will was our problem, right? That drinking alcohol really wasn't our problem. Our problem was that we're selfish and we're self-centered and we're driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-pity. And we step on the toes of everybody, and they retaliate, and that's our problem. Not liquor or not drugs. Our problem is that we demand more than our share of everything in the world than we deserve. These instincts on steroids, you know, the social instinct, the security instinct, and the sex instinct on steroids. We need more. I suffer from the disease of more. I need more attention and more material goods and more sex than anybody on the planet. It's just my nature. You know, I'm never happy where I'm at. I'm just never seem to be satisfied with what I have. More. It didn't matter how good it was at that time. And the way I see the steps was it was all about bringing those instincts in line with God's will. Bringing my self-will in line with God's will. You know, these three instincts, the social instinct, the security instinct, and the sex instinct, making up self-will, was to bring this self-will in line with what God intended it to be from the first place. And me to stop trying to demand more than my share of everything in the world than I deserve or that I'm due. And to me, everything has led there. The first five steps have led there to expose that truth and realize that I'm powerless over those instincts. And in 7, bring God into that situation just like I did with alcohol and drugs. And then to me, you know, except for 8 and 9, we're doing some unfinished business, go out there and start to repair the damage that we've done in the world and with other people. To me, steps 10 and 11 are all about leading back there, keeping that in check. You know, learning how. I've learned the proper use of the will in 4 through 9, and in 10, practicing that, I'm now starting to reel those instincts in. You know, still struggling with them. Still struggling to keep them where God intended them to be. They're powerful forces. There's pleasure in them. And I'm a pleasure seeker. Anything that will change the way I feel, I like. And when I'm not feeling on the beam or I'm not feeling connected, I'll act out on one of those instincts to make me feel better. Whether I demand, I get some attention for you, I do something that impresses you, or I go buy something that new that makes me feel good, or whether I act out sexually that'll change the way I feel emotionally. And to me, 10 and 11 is about keeping those instincts where they belong, and that's why in step 11 they talk about we can use our will to this end all we want. It's the proper use of the will. He's given us our will back. If we keep it in check with 10 and 11. I mean, we're talking about 4 through 9 all the time. And then step 11, as the big book interprets, is how well did I do today with 4 through 9? At 9. You know? So to me, everything leads to 6 and 7, and everything leads back there. You know, and it's all about keeping that all in check. You know? That being said, you know, step 11 is all about improving our relationship with God. To me, it's all about improving that relationship. You know, it talks about we grow in understanding and effectiveness in step 10. We're growing in understanding of God. We need to build that relationship. And how do I build that relationship? It's the same way I build a relationship with you. You know, it's communication. You know, we talk. You know, I've met a lot of new people here. I've met a lot of new people in the fellowship all the time. We develop a relationship. You talk, I listen. I talk, you listen. You know, we develop a relationship by communicating back and forth. And to me, that's where the prayer and meditation comes into, is how do I develop this relationship sought through prayer and meditation to improve my conscious contact, to improve my relationship with God praying only, and this is where I lost it. It took me a long time to hear those words. Praying only for the knowledge of His will for me and the power to carry that out. I missed that part for a long time. I prayed for a lot of other stuff. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. You know, there's nothing wrong with praying for sick people to get well. There's nothing wrong for praying for a better job. There's nothing wrong with praying for Mr. or Mrs. Wright. It's just not step 11. It's just prayer. Hopeful thinking. And, you know, I was just talking to one of my guys who's in treatment right now. He called me from treatment. And it's embarrassing for me at times to get up here with as much time as or as long as I've been around to tell you I still struggle with prayer and meditation. You know, I seem to put it on the back burner at times. I'm aware of it. You know, I was listening to when I go to Jacksonville. I always attend. My son belongs to a non-denominational Christian church up in Jacksonville, a beautiful place, and I love going there with him. And so Christmas Eve we went there, and then later I went and did my thing at St. Joseph's up there. But Pastor Russ says something. I hope I come back to this later because it was so significant for me. But Pastor Russ, who's the pastor there, who I've met a bunch of times, and he says from the podium, he says, it's not that I'm anti-God, I'm just pro-self. And that's just so true for me. You know, I'm not anti-God, I'm all about God, but I'm just pro-self. I just, for some reason, take the reins a lot. And it just seems that I have to be driven to my knees. It seems that I have to be driven back to prayer and meditation. All my spiritual growth has seemed to come via pain, and I don't know why that is. I don't know why I don't go willing. I've had miracles take place in my life. The only thing that I have given up 100% to it, him, her, whatever your conception is my drinking and drugging, and that is unconditional, and that I've always gone there. I mean, my prayer life started when I was really tricked into the second step when I got here. You know, I had no intention, and that's true. I was tricked into the second step. You know, I got a suggestion that I tried, and I got results, and I said, "Crap, that God thing works." You know, but I never considered that option. You know, that was not. I didn't come into AA seeking God. I came into AA because I had nowhere else to go. I didn't know what else to do. I don't even know where the idea came from. You know, I had a sister in Alcoholics Anonymous. So maybe that was planted. Maybe her experience with AA, maybe that's what made me think. But up until the day that I decided to come into AA, I had never, ever considered coming into AA. Ever. Nobody even told me that I needed to go. It was just not my thing. I was not a foxhole prayer. You know, that wasn't my, I've been self-will run riot my whole life. Pro-self. I had no opinion on God. You know, as a kid growing up with God, my experience wasn't the greatest. It wasn't bad. I mean, I went to Catholic school as a kid, you know, and here's what I learned. Here's what I heard. That if you jump through the hoop, God loves you. And if you don't jump through the hoop, you go to the fire. Some of us went to a place called Purgatory. I think it's a halfway house. I don't know. Do you remember Purgatory? Does anybody else? Some people never heard of Purgatory. It's like halfway. I don't know. There was this prayer people used to say. I don't remember whether it was the act of contrition or something. They'd say, and you get shot up. This is what I learned as a child. You know, I looked at it as a form of discipline. Oh, look, I couldn't live up to that expectation as a young kid. I was the kid who went into confession and lied because I wanted to be normal. I wanted to be like you. You know, I would like take an inventory, like, what do you? How many lies you got? You know, yeah. Did you steal anything? How many times did you swear at all? You know, so I would get like an average, and I'd go in there and I'd average out my sins. Because I wanted to be the same as you. I wanted to be just like you. I didn't want to be better or worse. I used to leave confession with guilt. Shit, I just lied to the damn priest. I couldn't wait to get out of there. I couldn't wait. My grandma used to pick us up on Sunday mornings and take us. And I couldn't wait to be old enough to not have to go anymore, because that's the way it worked in our household. That's the way it worked. The women and the children went to Mass. The men went somewhere else. I didn't know later, till later, where they went. But I got to go with them at one point. Yeah, and didn't have to go to Mass anymore. And that was the end of my spiritual growth. We're talking 14 years old, 15 years old. That's it. Yeah. And I never went back. It wasn't that I'm, I'm the agnostic. I'm the ignorant when it comes to God. I'm without knowledge when I get here. Yeah. I'm not a non-believer. I just don't have any use for it. You know, it's like Santa Claus to me. That's the way I saw it. Yeah. And I don't even, like I said, I have this moment in a hotel room at 441 in Commercial Boulevard. It's a Days Inn, now La Quinta. You know, I have this revelation in this hotel room after a 3-week run that says, you need to go, you need help. You know, and I call my sister, and my sister takes me to AA. And I'm not here but 3 weeks. 2 weeks, and this guy named Camper John, I think I mentioned it when I was talking about the second step, Camper John looks at me and says, man, you don't look good. I said, no, I don't feel good. I'm detoxing in the rooms. And he says, you don't look good. I said, no, I don't feel too good. And he says, man, I don't know if you're going to make it. I said, well, thanks, John. Thought you were here for support. And John says, let me tell you what you need to do. He says, you need to get up in the morning. You need to ask God to help you stay away from a drink. And then at night, you need to thank him. Never dawned on me. That was never my idea. I never thought about that. You know, I heard the God thing talked about in a couple weeks that I was in the room, but I never thought about that. And I said, okay. And I started to walk away, and John said, well, you know what? And I said, what? He said, I don't think you can make it through the day. He says, well, I think you need to break your day up into 24 pieces. And I think you need to pray to get through the hour. And then pray to get through the hour. And then pray to get to lunch. And then pray to get to one and then to two. And break your day up. And then at the end, thank him for getting you through the day. All right. And I'm struggling. I mean, I'm battling an obsession at the time. And I started doing what John said. And I started to feel some relief. So much so that I was doing a build-out for an appliance company down in South Dade, and there was a jewelry store next door, and I went next door, and I said, I need a cross. And he says, yo, you want a crucifix? I said, I ain't going that far. I said, just a regular cross, a plain cross. I was like 3-4 weeks sober, you know, and I still have it today. I've lost it a couple times in the yard and found it. And that simple suggestion changed my life. Because now I'm starting to put weeks together. And it seems as though there's some power in this God thing. There seems to be some power in this prayer. You know, we're results-based. I'm results-based. You know, you tell me to do something and I get results, I'm on board. You know, and that seems to be the way it works for me. You know, when I got to pages 84, 83 through 88, that's what I started living. You know, once I got through the steps with Brian, Brian grabbed me at 90 days and took me through the steps in a couple of months. And I started living 84 through 88. And 84 through 88 works just fine until it don't. You know, all right? I mean, it's just, everything's just fine. I call it hitting a wall. You know, I mean, I think we all hit them. I don't think I'm the only one that hits them. You know, it seemed like, you know that wall, like where you seem like you're doing everything right, but you feel like crap? You know, why do I feel so lousy? I'm doing everything that's suggested. I'm chairing meetings. I'm sponsoring guys. I'm speaking. I'm doing everything that they suggest. I'm praying in the morning. I'm praying at night. Why do I feel like crap? Why do I hate my home group? Why do I hate everybody in my home group? That's what happened. That's what happened to me. I'm 10 years sober in my home group, and I'm looking around and go, if that asshole shares that dog and ketchup story one more effing time, I am going to kill him. I'm going to kill him. And you know, oh, here comes the story about the, you know, the dog, you know. And you just know what everybody's going to say. You just, it's the same story every week, and I'm dying inside in a group that I owe my life to. And I don't know what to do. You know, I don't know what to do. And I'm doing 84-8, and I'm sponsoring guys. Matter of fact, I just got a call today from a guy, my first guy that I sponsored in that meeting, celebrating 20 years next month. You know, and my first successful sponsee called me today. You know. Look, the truth is they were all successful because I didn't drink. But first successful one that got stayed sober. And it'd be picking up 20 years, which is really cool. So I turned to my sponsor, Howard, and I said, Howard, I can't do this anymore. And he goes, can't do what? I said, I can't sit here anymore. I hate this place. Yeah. And he says, what do you mean? I said, I just can't. I'm dying inside sitting in my home group. He says, you need to pray on it. You know? What a great suggestion. You know, like, why didn't I think of that? Right? I mean, but that's me. It isn't until I hit the wall, it isn't until I hit the pain that I decide that, okay, I'm pro-God. Let me turn this over. Let me pray on this and seek direction. That's what this is about, is seeking direction. So what is His will for me? And as soon as I position myself in that, as soon as I go there and position myself properly, which equals trust, as soon as I trust Him and position myself properly, and start meditating and praying, the answers come. Or the answers are presented. I don't even know how that works. It just seems like once I position myself, once I put myself in a place where I can be helped, once I'm willing to take help, once I'm able to vocalize what's going on in my life, because the power is in that fifth step. That's an amazing thing. That when we don't talk about what's going on in our lives, the power is lost in this process. Whether it be with our sponsor or somebody that we're walking this path with. So as soon as I talk about with Howard and I get that simple suggestion again, the same suggestion that John gives me, I run into a gentleman, you know, who I hadn't seen in a long time. Very influential in me getting sober when I first got here. And he hands me a book. I decided to go to a different meeting. He hands me a book called The Prayer of Jabez. Changed my life. That book absolutely changed my life. And I'm not promoting any religion or any book or anything. I'm just saying it. You know, the bill suggests, hey, look, seek out other literature. There's a treasure trove of literature out there. You know, there's see where religious people might be right. Use what they have to offer. Yeah. This isn't the end all. When 84-88 isn't working anymore, move outside this book a little bit. Yeah. And the short version of the prayer of Jabez is, you know, bless me, protect me as I go out from here, and expand my territory. And be careful praying that prayer, because He will expand your territory. I'm praying that prayer for a couple days. A group down in Hollywood asked me to do a big book series on Wednesday night. Guess where my home group was? Wednesday night. I said, hey, Howard, I got this opportunity to expand my territory a little bit. I'm going to go do this big book study for 12 weeks, and then I'll be back. I haven't been back since. It was exactly what I needed. It was exactly what I needed. Yeah. I hit the wall, and you hit the wall, you have a breakthrough or a breakdown, one of the two, right? You either stay there and stagnate and die a sober death internally, or you have a breakthrough and you move on and you grow. That opened up more doors. So I do this big book study. While I'm doing this big book study, somebody asked me to speak at a meeting up in Zion. I go up in Zion and I speak. I run into people I haven't seen for 15 years. Yeah. Somebody hears my story. I think I shared this with you guys. Somebody hears my story, and here's that I got remarried, and so I came in here on a divorce, and I got remarried 2 years sober to the same woman. And somebody, all he heard me say during my whole talk was, I got my wife back at 2 years sober. And he went, what? I need to get my wife back. I think I'll have him sponsor me. And he asked me to sponsor him. And so him and I start going through the book at a halfway house in Deerfield. And a bunch of other people at that halfway house start joining in on the big book study. It gets too big for the apartment. So we end up taking it down into the weight room and turning the weight room into a meeting room. It gets too big for that, so they cut out a room for us, and they call it the room. And we end up having a meeting there, and it's the Deerfield Beach Study Group now. It's my home group that's been going on since 2005, you know, up in Deerfield, where there's 100 people there every week studying the big book or studying the steps. And it's just amazing what God can do once I get outside of myself. I meet some dude named Garrett at the Zion meeting that I'm speaking at, and he introduces me to Chris R. And Chris really validated everything that validated me. You know, why I needed validation, I don't know. I don't know where the meetings were going when I was here, but I was like, when I would come into a meeting, like, put the big book away. You know, like, we had enough of that. It was just like anti-big book. I don't know what was going on in the early 90s when I got here. A lot of open depression meetings. You know, a lot of who's got the problem stuff, you know. I mean, it just was. I mean, there was a clubhouse in West Boca that had 48 meetings in there, two literature-based meetings. So if you want to talk about your crap, you have 46 opportunities to go dump your shit. But if you wanted to study the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, you had two meetings to choose from. You know, that's just where the trend was going. And I was a big book guy. I was that guy. I was, here comes the big book thumpers, me and Brian, you know. Because I'm a Joe and Charlie guy. I'm following Charlie Pomeroy. You know, that's my mentor. You know, I'm following this guy. This is the program, is the book. And I'm getting ostracized. And Chris validated everything that I had been saying. So, you know, through Chris, and we had Chris come down in 2005 and speak for us. I met him up in Kissimmee. But then I get, you know, I find out who his, I find Mark Houston, or I shouldn't be, Mark H. And you're going to scrub this, right? And I start following Mark. And I'm just on fire. I just, you know, I'm hearing the message that I need to hear. And through Mark and his sponsorship feeling, I start listening to Joe H. I find Pete, a bunch of his CDs, and I start listening to these guys. And these guys are on the page. These guys are where this is where I am. These guys are the guys I need to connect with, you know. You know, I ended up, as I said, remarrying my wife, and at 2 years sober. At 15 years sober, 16 years sober, she wants out of the marriage, you know. And I was absolutely devastated. It seems as though, as I said, in my darkest moments, the most spiritual growth comes out of me, and it's all about leaning in. My sponsors say it's about leaning in and not hitting the wall and falling back. It's you know, when you hit that spiritual desert, it's about leaning in. And I've never been so lost in sobriety when that happened. I mean, I felt like a failure. I mean, how can I be getting a divorce, you know, in recovery? How does that happen? You know, how does a marriage fall apart in recovery? And look, she wanted a divorce. I mean, I think in her defense, you know, and I think I talked about this amends that I made with her. In her defense, she never got normal, what she considered normal. She wasn't one of us. You know, she never got, she had 10 years of total excess and then 16 years of total abstinence, and she just couldn't take one more gratitude dinner. You know what I mean? It was like, you know, I just can't do one more sober party. I just can't. She wanted to go out once or twice a week and have a couple of drinks and go home. That's what she wanted, and I couldn't be part of that. And I did share with you guys that she liked a little bit of the pot too, so... And I couldn't be around it. It just wasn't who I was, and so we ended up living separate lives. And so I get, you know, why she wanted out of it, but I was blown away. I remember driving up and down A1A, wanting out. You know, 16 years sober, I want out. I don't want to play anymore, and I don't want to drink, but I don't want to play. You know, I was just, you talk about a spiritual desert, you know. I wanted to go to the mountains of Pennsylvania and hide, you know, in some shack and grow my own food and just have nothing to do with people ever again, you know. I mean, that was just where I was at. And I don't know how, it's amazing how this program works. And thank God for you guys. Thank God for the people I sponsor. Thank God for the groups that I'm involved in. Because when you're in the middle of this thing, it's hard to get out. You know, it really is. You try to go for the door and they block your way. You know, like I'm going to run home and sit in my self-pity and, hey, I need to talk to you. You know, and pull you out of it. But I get this call. I'm driving up and down A1A. I get this call from Billy G. And Billy G was the guy who got me through. When I came in here on a divorce, Billy G was the guy who used to stand out in front of the bottom line in a Fifth Chapter club till 2 in the morning with me and talk me through not picking up a drink and how to get home. And Billy calls me. I hadn't talked to Billy in 10 years. And Billy calls me while I'm going through this. And you know what he says? You're on my heart. You were on my heart. How does that happen, right? What's going on? I've learned to not ignore that. You know, I've learned when somebody comes on my heart to make that call. You know, Billy taught me that day. That when I'm thinking about somebody, there's a reason why I'm thinking about them. I need to call them. You know, I have those kind of connections with the guys that I'm around. Something's going on. And I tell Billy what's going on, and Billy says, cool, I'm coming tonight, I'm picking you up, we're taking you down to a meeting down in North Dade. I said, no, I don't know. He goes, no, seriously, you got to come down. Russ S. is speaking down there. I said, oh, no. You know, no, you know, not the God Squad guys. You know, and that's why I grouped a bunch of people into that God Squad, you know. Not those guys. He said, no, we're picking you up. I said, Billy, I'm not going there. No, we'll be there at 8 o'clock. We're going to pick you up, right? They pick me up and they take me down to this on track. I think it's called On Track or something. It's not there anymore, but it's done in North Dade. And the clock is at 4 o'clock. I got a lot of time. 4 hours. I walk into that room and sit down. And people, you know, a lot of you guys know Russ. And Russ starts the meeting off like this. He says, if you're a newcomer, you might want to go to another meeting. He says, because I'm here for the guy who's got 15, 20, 25 years, who's dying inside, and I just broke down. Oh, geez, God. He's talking to me. He was talking to me. He was talking to me. I used to wonder why he would open up a meeting like that. Yeah. And I was that guy. I was the guy 16 years sober dying inside. Time to reach outside of AA. You know, it's time to seek more. You know, and that's constant. I mean, I'm constantly doing that. I mean, we're constantly doing that, right? We're constantly processing new information. We take that new information, we incorporate it into our recovery, we discard what we don't want, and we grow. But boy, I tell you, I didn't have much use for that kind of stuff. But, you know, we get desperate. I get desperate. And I'm driven to my damn knees. It's not usually my choice. You know, I remember a real miracle that took place in my life. In 07, we had a group anniversary, and and Pete came down to speak for at our home group at the Deerfield Beach Study Group when it was at one of the local halfway houses, which is now a treatment center, and they had their motives for bringing him down, but we were glad to have you speak at our anniversary dinner. And I remember Pete and I and Artie went to dinner after, and I always talk about, I don't know how Pete remembers the conversation, but I always talk about, you know, that I was having this philosophical debate with Pete. You know that debate where how virgins get pregnant and people raised from the dead and all that kind of stuff. And then I always correct myself and say, well, we weren't having this philosophical debate. I was. You know, Pete wasn't engaging at all in the debate. And Pete looks at me and he says, did you ever think that you would be 16 years sober? And I said, no. He said, that's an absolute miracle, isn't it? And I said, yeah. And he said, so anything's possible? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess so. But what was significant is when we were leaving, he said to me, maybe you should go back to the religion of your childhood and leave for a good reason. And that hit me. And it's, I think it was a Saturday night. And I go home that night, and that tape is playing. Like I'm dying inside, and those words are playing in my head. And I'm going, like, what do I got to freaking lose? You know, I'm walking through a freaking desert here, and I need food and water. And I've just been offered the solution, and I'm debating it. And I ended up going to... I ended up going to church for a long, first time in a long time the next day, and the next morning, that Sunday. And in St. Elizabeth Ann Seton, not in Coral Springs, I have a spiritual experience in that church. And my prayer was this, show yourself if you're here. If you are real, show yourself now, because I am dying inside. And I have this experience in this church, an undeniable experience, you know. And I give up the fight. I give up the fight. It dawns on me that this is the second time God's getting me out of this marriage, and I'm still trying to fight my way back in. Like, what are you thinking? You know? He's doing for you what you can't do for yourself. Move on. You know? Stop the fight. You're losing the battle. And I lose that. I leave that church. I thought, you know what? Whatever you want, take it. Because I was fighting for the house. I'm fighting for that. You know, I'm fighting for it. Give it up. The house is yours if you want it. I don't even need the money. I'll take it later. You know, take what you want. Let me know what you're going to do. And I surrender. As I'm in that church praying, what comes on my heart is who my next sponsor is. And some of you guys know Garrett M., and he becomes my next sponsor. And here's how I asked him to sponsor me. You scare the shit out of me. But I need what you got. Will you sponsor me? And we had some great years together. And I had some great growth with him together. And I miss him dearly. Not just emotionally, but program-wise, I miss him. I miss my guide. And it dawned on me... this weekend, it's about positioning. You know, I've been feeling that restlessness and irritability, you know, catching up with me recently. You know, I know when I'm going off track and when I'm in traffic. I mean, that's kind of like my first give. That's my first tell, is when I start yelling at people to myself in traffic. You know, when I have this conversation with me about people and the way they drive, I know that I'm starting to get off track. Yeah, you know, and I start to dislike my job, and I start to look at the negatives in my relationship, and that's just, I know I'm off track, and I've been feeling off track, and Pastor Russ this weekend when we were up in Jacksonville says, "Why?" You know, he hit me. He nailed me, and his words were, "It's time to recommit." It's time to recommit. And why is it, I don't know if you guys are like me, I hate to receive gifts. I don't like giving gifts. I love giving them to you. You know, like, I love making you happy when I give you a gift, but I don't like to receive them. I'm uncomfortable receiving gifts. And he was talking about, why is that? You know, why is it that we don't want to take the gift? Is it there's strings attached to the gift? Is it if we open the gift, is there something we're going to have to do? Is there some directions that we're going to have to follow that are attached to the gift? Is there a commitment attached to the gift? So I don't even want to open the gift. I'm just going to keep it in the box. I don't want to really know what's in there. Thank you for the gift. Set it aside. It hit me that I was given a gift in that church that day, and I haven't really opened it. You know, I haven't opened it. I haven't gotten, why? I don't know why. Because am I just not willing to commit? You know, I don't want to commit what it takes to develop that relationship. You know. And I got called. I got called on Sunday. Monday. It was Christmas, right? Yeah, on Monday. And I got to recommit on Monday. And I, you know, it's those brief deserts and then hit the wall and then have the breakthrough, you know, and I feel like I've had another breakthrough. And I think this whole program for me is that, is having these constant breakthroughs that I'm going to hit these walls and I got to have these breakthroughs. I got to find more. I need more information. I need more. And that's why we see so many people eventually, and you know, I'm talking to people who've been around a while, you know, and it sounds like I'm promoting, but I'm not. That's why we see so many people turn to religious denominations at some point in their recovery. At some point in 11, we just run out of spiritual information in the program. There's nowhere else to grow. There's nowhere else to grow. We're inventory, confession, repentance, I like to call 6 and 7, restitution. You know, we 4 through 9 all the time. Pray in the morning, pray during the day, pray at night, meditate. There's nowhere else to grow but spiritually. So I have to be constantly seeking more. I have to be constantly going out there and seeking more information. And I'm that guy. I'm not anti anything. I do everything. I participate in some of all of it. I don't necessarily buy into all of any of it. But I don't need to anymore. There's, you know, I'm done analyzing. I am finished trying to analyze it and prove things. I just don't need it anymore. I am going to utilize it. Why? Because it's good for me. You know, because it works. You know, I get results. I show up, I ask, I get results, it worked. I don't need to know all the nuances of what goes on there. I mean, the Buddhists have great meditation. I've learned so much from the Buddhists as far as meditation with mantras and incorporating them into my quiet time. You know, the Catholics and the Jews have such great prayers. You know, there's just so much great information out there. I do Reiki. I do yoga. You know, I do anything that will help me grow spiritually. I've had some of my best meditations in Reiki. Not step 11, but great meditations. You know? I've had absolute miracles take place in my life through prayer and meditation. But yet I'm still a skeptic at times. Yeah. I hate to even admit that I still am pro-self at times until it fails. And then I become pro-God. You know, I mentioned, I don't know how prayer works. I don't know if prayer changes my attitude and my positioning or if prayer actually changes things, but I know that when I pray, things change. That's all I know. I just don't know how it all works, and I really don't need to know how it all works. But I have seen absolute miracles take place over prayer. I'm going to share something with you that happened last year when I mentioned that I almost lost my mother, you know, twice. And man, I was fighting it. My mother died twice in the hospital. And I mean, I had priests there, praying over her and last rites. And she was funny. She said, the Magi was here. You know, there was this Haitian priest that came into the... the Magi came today. I said, awesome. You know, and but there was it was at some point where the second time she almost went, and they pulled her out of ICU and taken her down to the to her room, and they noticed her feet and legs were going black, that she was losing circulation in her feet, and that they may have to take her feet, you know. And you know, I remember my wife and I sitting in that room that night, and I was like, it was like the angry prayer, you know, okay, enough, you know, either take her or leave her, but don't take her feet, you know. And I laid hands on her feet that night, and I prayed and meditated with my wife together. And the next morning, they went to take her down to do some tests as to why they were black, and they pulled the covers back, and they were pink. Unexplainable. Just unexplainable. You know, but still the skeptic? How can you be a skeptic? Right? How can I not give God the glory in those situations, right? I mean, it's just an absolute... The doctors and the nurses look at me, and they look at each other, and they go, I knew. You know, I knew what happened. It's amazing power in that, and the truth is, it is the central fact of my life today, that God is the central fact of my life today, that I go there all the time. I go to pain first, and then I go there. You know, I go to uncomfortability, and then I go there. You know, to me, it's like being hungry and I go to food. I need a breath, I go to air. You know, I start feeling uncomfortable, I go to God. You know, I wouldn't do without prayer all day long as I wouldn't do without food or water. You know, it's just become a natural part of my life. But that constant surrender that I have to constantly commit each day, I mean, that 10th step and that 11th step in the morning, I have to constantly recommit because I really do want to take the reins. But I know that it's going to lead me to my knees again, you know. And maybe that's just the way it's supposed to be for me. I don't know. You know, it's just, you know, guys I sponsor are so much further ahead of me in these areas. And just one of the areas that I've come along slowly in is in the prayer and meditation. You know, it's just, it's hard for me to quiet the voices. I was happy when it was just two. You know, when it was just one argument, I was thrilled to death. I could control that. You know, it was when all those voices were yelling up there that I was a problem. But I do get opportunities to quiet the mind. I do go out into my back porch, and I've learned a lot about meditation. And there are times where I can silence the voices briefly. You know, and it seems like, you know, when I do silence the voices, when I do get in tune with nature and I become one with nature, when I'm in those quiet meditation times and really seeking God's word, the voices stop briefly, and it seems like 10 minutes, and it's probably 10 seconds, you know. And then I recommit and get quiet again, and I find real peace in that. And it's just... It just amazes me that I don't go there naturally. You know, it just still, to me, baffles me that I have to struggle and be driven to it time and time again. You know. So anyways, that's enough out of me tonight. Thanks.
Let's thank Pat one more time. And Stephanie's going to come up and do our secretary's report.
Hi, my name is Stephanie, and I'm your recovered alcoholic secretary. In keeping with the seventh tradition, which states that every group shall be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions, the baskets are now going around. I have asked Kathleen to please come up and read the recovered statement. We read this notice to explain why many people in this group identify as recovered rather than recovering, and what it exactly means to be a recovered alcoholic.
Hi, my name is Kathleen, and I'm a real alcoholic.
Hi, Kathleen.
Recovered. We are not cured of alcoholism. Recovered, but not cured. That presents a conflict to some alcoholics. If we were cured, we would be able to drink responsibly. No, we are not cured. The allergic reaction to alcohol will remain for us for the rest of our life. But we have been restored to sanity. That was the problem. The main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than his body. We are now sane where alcohol is concerned. Consequently, we have recovered.
Tonight's 1940 style Facebook sponsorship from forward to the second edition Alcoholics Anonymous. Of alcoholics who came to AA and really tried, 50%
sobered up at once and remained that way. 25% sobered up after some relapses, and among the remainder, those who stayed on with AA showed improvement. What we've seen, felt, come to believe, and experience is that God has not changed over time, and neither should the sacred approach back to his loving arms. The statistics above suggest a 75% success rate. May I please see a show of hands of recovered alcoholics? And is there anyone in need of a sponsor? Could you please raise your hand? Please join us Monday nights for the Big Book Study meeting where the book comes alive. Fellowship is at 6:30 and the Big Book Study starts at 7:15. Also, the 62nd Annual Florida State Convention Waves of Serenity is coming up. More information can be found in the back. The AA's Got Talent tickets are officially on sale. AA's Got Talent show will be February 3rd. That is a Saturday. Robert, could you please stand up? And Robert right here has tickets for sale. The third annual Chapters to Recovery convention is also coming up in Miami, Florida. That is June 29th through July 1st. More information can be found in the back. And the, So we have CDs, mugs, large print big books, little red book, and big book dictionaries for sale in the back. We meet every Thursday starting promptly at 7:15. And we ask that you be courteous and ready to begin at the sound of the bells. See you next week.
Also, one of our announcements, Monday, January 8th, Fort Lauderdale Primary Purpose Big Book Study Group's Coney Island Hot Dog Extravaganza. So, Zach? The gentlemen in the back have some flyers for that. It's a free event, free hot dogs. We're celebrating our annual meeting, and Pat R. is actually going to be back and do the honors of telling his story. So please join us. It's fun. It's free. It starts at 6:30. Fellowship starts at 6:30. The meeting's at 7:15. So we hope to see you all there. If you're going to thank Pat tonight, just line down the center aisle. And what else? Smoking. We've got a quick no smoking reminder. When you walk out, just please don't light up. That includes vapes. We've got a smoking area to the left. There's buckets. With that, we'll close with the Lord's Prayer. Our Father.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come. Thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Happy New Year. Thank you. Hey, Eric.
because their body's aching. I am desperately in need of restoration. Yeah. And I am ready for you to take me higher, yeah. The only thing that I can do is keep on praying. 'Cause on my own, I just can't get it right. It doesn't matter how hard I try, but with you I become a much stronger man. Getting on my knees, puts me back on my feet again. Load is heavy, too much accumulation. Possessions that I have amount to nothing at all. And I am willing to hand over every one of them. 'Cause they won't profit me anything. The sun comes
shining through. But when you crying, you bring on the rain. So stop your sighing, baby, and be happy again. Yes, and keep on smiling. Keep on smiling, baby. And I hope you will smile.
Let it shine, 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 let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine, 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 let it shine.